You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Bonnie Clearwater, and she's talking to me from Fort Lauderdale. She's the director and chief curator at NSU Art Museum of Fort Lauderdale. Bonnie, I want to thank you for being with me today.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Let's talk a little bit about the museum and your role there. I also want to talk about the current show that you're working on now. But what is your role at the museum exactly?
Well, I'm the director and chief curator, so that means I'm responsible for all the administration of the museum, the vision, the development, all the different programs that we have going on for the public. And I'm also the chief curator, so I am also responsible for the types of exhibitions that the museum is presenting and programming, as well as I curate a lot of the exhibitions for the museum as well, such as the upcoming Frank Stella Experiment and Change exhibition, which opens on November 12th and will be up on view through July 8th.
So I want to talk about the Frank Stella show, but first, you know, when we talk about your role and what it is you do there, it really sounds like three jobs. You know, there's, all the administration and the kind of vision of the museum, overseeing that as well as curating and as well as being the lead development person, I would imagine. That's really three jobs, isn't it?
At the least. But I'm very good at being able to compartmentalize what I do. And I think the fact that as the director, I can also be very passionate about our programming. And, there was a while that a lot of museums, the director and curatorial staff are separate staff positions and departments. But I think that for me, I've always run museums that way. And it keeps the focus on what is really important at the museum, which is the art, education, and the public, and reaching out to the widest possible audience. I'm luckily good with numbers and with budgets and with fundraising, but it does make for a more compelling case when the director is also so passionate about the art itself and the educational programs and the community outreach. It's a very effective way of running a museum.
So let's talk about a few of those things. But first, through the lens perhaps of the show that you're putting together now, can you talk a little bit about this Frank Stella show and why this is different from perhaps other recent or past mountings of his work?
Right. Well, Frank Stella and I have a work. This is the second major exhibition we're doing together. The first I did in 1999 December 99 and went through March of 2000, and it was the first survey of his work from the 90s, and it was specific that we were looking at the 90s because that was really the decade when the work changed so radically. It baffled most people how it related to his early minimalist painting. The work of the 90s was clearly maximalist, almost Baroque in character, lots of a fusion of color, a fusion of form, and no one had really tackled, this is the end of the 90s, no one had really tackled what did it mean that he was making work like that at that juncture in his career?
And the work that you're talking about, I mean, it's hard to sum it up, but we're talking about these kind of explosive constructions that he was making that were huge and seemed in some ways, as I think about them, like exploded paintings, these incredibly dynamic sculptural surfaces that are colored almost like it's his previous paintings. Is that what you're talking about, that type of work?
Yeah, it was that kind of work. And it's really the for most of his career, he was adamant that even when the work was extremely dimensional, it was still painting. It was not sculpture. In 90, he finally conceded that he was making sculptures, and on top of that, he started designing architecture as well. He had come to have this position regarding what is exciting in painting, and what to him was exciting is a kind of space that was actual, that you could feel that you could actually live in and experience as the viewer. So the logical next step for him during the 90s was to make sculpture and even more architecture that the viewer felt that they could actually inhabit that space, not just look at it. So it was a completely, it was an evolution from what he had been doing from the beginning of his career, but it now was fully dimensional. So the exhibition that I did was showing how, even though the work looked so different from his early black painting series of 1958-59, which gave him his initial renown and success at the age of 23, and those were, you know, just very regimented black bands or stripes on a canvas with just very little separation between them, showing the white canvas coming through. So they gave them a striped look. It was hard for people to reconcile how he came from that to these very maximalist Baroque type of work. So what I did with that exhibition was to show, plot out a different point of view and to show how he got from A to Z, and everything fell into place. We had a very positive working relationship, and we stayed friends all these years. And when I came to this museum, NSU Art Museum of Fort Lauderdale, the building itself was also very appealing to Stella. This is a classic modernist building by one of the architects of his time, Edward Larrabee Barnes. It opened in 1996. And it's a kind of space that a lot of artists really feel comfortable in because it's made in the same proportion that their art was made in. And it was this kind of space that Stella had conceived his work to be shown. So we started talking about doing another exhibition together. I was particularly interested in the subject of research and development. When one of my first visits to his studio, we were going through the studio and he was giving me a tour, and he just, you know, sort of flippantly pointed to a table at one side of the studio and said, "And over there is research and development." And what was on the table is all these different ideas that that were percolating there for him. And my knowledge of his working method made me think that it would be a really great way to demonstrate how he thinks, how he processes, how he puts it all together, how he experiments, and how through that experiment change came about. And when I brought that idea to him, he knew exactly what he, you know, how to do it. We wanted, as I explained to him, I want to be able to present this exhibition so it's illuminating without being didactic, you know, that from the installation itself, from the selection of works themselves, the viewer could pretty much draw their own conclusions in understanding what the process, what the research, what the experimentation was that got him from one work to the other, and how they all connected. And so it would be illuminating without having to be didactic, telling everybody exactly what they were seeing. It would be clear from the selection itself. So he got it right away and started pulling works and showing me juxtapositions of works that immediately I saw the connections, and I knew it would make a great exhibition. In addition,
because just to be clear, when you're looking at work with him, and in terms of what you were saying to him, you're interested in the transitions between types of working. Is that correct?
Right. It's the transitions. It's showing the transitions in continuity. It's possible in certain parts of this exhibition to see a work from 1960, a work from 1974, and a work from 2017. And whereas seeing them in isolation or even chronologically, it might not have connected. But when you see them all together, you know, juxtaposed all together, it's instant recognition that this is the same artist, even though they look completely different. It's the same artist. It's a continuity of idea and exploration. So, and on top of that, it's visually exciting. There's a strong visual impact in this exhibition, which was another thing that we wanted to get across. There's been a kind of misunderstanding of Stella right from the beginning of the career because his works were so minimal and the original black painting so austere that there is a that they were about trying to fulfill the goal of the rules of modernism of creating a flat painting with as little pictorial illusionism in it as possible. And because he basically succeeded in that with the Black Strike paintings, that is what most people expect of his work, is this very strict, modernist, formalist interpretation of his work, when indeed the thing that he was after right from the beginning of his career was to see how he could make a visually impactful, moving work that would stand up to the masterpieces of art history. And once I realized that that was his intentions all along, everything else fell in place. And, you know, he gave a lecture in 1960 to art students at Pratt University, and he's only 24 years old, but he's already had a show at the Museum of Modern Art by that point. And his advice to students was exactly what he went through to train himself to be an artist, was look deeply at the great art of all time, absorb it closely, examine it, imitate it until you can't take it anymore, and then it becomes second nature to the artist so that they don't even have to think about it anymore as they're working, but they've learned everything from the masters. And in a sense, that is what has driven his work all along, and he constantly is asking himself, does it measure up? Is this as great as van der Weyden's crucifixion diptych at the Philadelphia Art Museum? Is this as great as Matisse's dance? Is this as great as Malevich's supremacist constructivist paintings? So
the answer has to be yes, in a sense, for him to move on or feel that it's successful.
Well, yeah, he has to at least feel it does have that impact. He's too modest to ever say that he measures up. But I think that it's a great message to artists to realize that in the end they do have to measure up to the rest of art history rather than the best artists in their class or the best artist that is known at this time because it is judged against history. And so that does give a different way of understanding how his work really has this visual punch that when the viewer is actually standing in front of him, and that's the other thing, the importance of seeing the work in person, not on the internet, not in reproduction, but seeing it in person has a totally different effect than anything through reproduction. Especially since one of the things that he's very interested in is the role of perception. And in many cases, if it's being seen at a different scale than the original, the viewer is not going to understand that it has to do with their. They're not going to bring into consideration their binocular vision or peripheral vision, which are also important for experiencing these works.
That's what's also exciting about mounting the show. It sounds like, you know, because as you're saying, that's so true with Stella, and especially this dimensional work, this sculptural work. It has to be seen. It has to also be installed. But you're presenting a variety of work, correct?
Right. It's a variety of work. It's not a retrospective, but it spans his entire 60 years. We're not trying to go series by series or chronologically or, you know, medium. We're not doing it that way. We really installed it so that the viewer themselves can make the connections. They can connect the dots. What was he really interested? How did he follow through on his sets of problems he was trying to resolve right from the beginning of his career, and how does he keep going back to it in different ways and getting a different resolution out of it?
It's very interesting. Vito Acconci used to give a lecture that was always somewhat similar. He would start off talking about his early work and then, you know, his poetry, and talked about how one thing ended and the other began, right, and they all kind of evolved into one another. And, you know, late in his career, him doing design and architecture seemed like the natural next step,
And then the other great thing that we have in the show, and it's the first time ever shown, is his working archive. These are, one part of it is really that people can see Stella at his freest and most playful, because these aren't finished works. They're, you know, some are even like doodles.
So what does that mean, his working archive? These are things in his collection that aren't completed?
They're not meant as finished works. They're studies, they're ideas, there's notations, there's sketches, there's models and maquettes and collages. There are things he's just clearly playing with, and different materials he's trying out. Some led to new series, or new materials, but some are really just for himself. I would compare what we have here to the memoirs of Montaigne, where we have the best document of a way one human being has thought, lived, sees, and thinks, and creates. Mm-hmm. In this exhibition, both from the working archive and from the finished works. It's an incredible document to this genius artist.
But it's also an incredible show for you to mount. Among everything else, this sounds like a very exciting show to conceive and be involved in.
Oh, yeah, it is. And I think one of the reasons he likes working with me is I don't ask him questions and he doesn't have to tell me things. I let the art speak for itself. So when I realized I had to determine for myself, why was he putting certain works together that weren't obviously belonging together? And I would make these revelations for myself, what was going on. And so I would write about this, and it's, you know, based on, you know, over 20 years of extensive knowledge of his work, and of course I've known his work my entire life. But to feel like I could really connect with it, and then I would turn in what I wrote to him, and he's one of the best editors I've ever had, and he's really good. He's very careful. And he returned it to me the next day with, I have to say, two sections. He gave me very good exclamation mark. So that was really nice and didn't ask me to change anything. He really liked the different approach that I brought to it based on what just studying how what we had what was selected and how it was being juxtaposed.
Let's talk a little bit about education. I know that's a strong point for you, and of course, even in this show that we're discussing, the way it's put together, how it's presented to the public, of course, is very educational for the public in a particular way. We're understanding how the artist works. We're understanding how an artist evolves and goes from one type of work to another, which is a very important idea for the public to understand, and an unusual one that probably isn't addressed very often in exhibitions. In terms of how you see education at the museum, is there a particular point of view you have on that as opposed to the way other museums see it in terms of, I don't know, the demographic or group or how people get introduced to this? Is there way you're seeing it?
The museum is a good question. The museum is part of Nova Southeastern University, NSU, and it's one of the top research universities in the country. And it has successfully broken down the silos between disciplines and so multidisciplinary research and study is one of the characteristics of the university. This is a perfect, the museum is a perfect way of introducing the public to the idea of cross-disciplinary approach to every subject. And that comes naturally to my own approach to art history. So our exhibitions are there not only to say, oh, look at this great work of art, how it was created, you know, why it was created, what does it mean in itself, but to see it in a bigger context. For instance, we have the museum has the largest collection of the post-war avant-garde art movement Cobra, and consequently, we have made as part of our exhibition profile post-World War II Europe and American art, and looking at how the World War II and the post-war period impacted artists. Last year, we launched a series specifically addressing this called the Regeneration Series with a massive Anselm Kiefer exhibition. And the Stella exhibition is actually the second in the Regeneration. And Stella is among the first generation of American artists to emerge after World War II. And he recognizes that he entered history at a certain point of a continuum, and that, in a way, a lot of his thinking, what he can do as an artist, has been preordained by the moment he's entered history. So one of the things that he had said to me early on, and I had actually touched on in my last book on him in 2000, was the idea of free will in his work. That as a artist, he feels that art is the one place one has the illusion of complete freedom. And I showed in the introductory text how this is really coming out of a post-war zeitgeist, such as the impact of existentialism, but also politically, for instance, there was great restrictions placed on artists during the Nazi period. Modern art was banned and for being degenerate. In the Soviet bloc, the only art that was sanctioned was social realism. And in the U.S., during the McCarthy period, the avant-garde came under suspicion as well. The first exhibition that Stella participated in was a group exhibition at Princeton. He had gone to Princeton University as an undergraduate. And while he was a senior there, The exhibition was called Freedom of Expression. And all through his career, he battles with this idea of if he has to work within the rules of modernism, how can he exercise his freedom of expression? And in fact, and that is one of the things that comes across in this exhibition. We laid out what the rules of modernism is towards this purity of painting, the flat pigment on a flat surface, no illusion, no outside illusions, no narrative, just pure painting. If that were the rules that he was handed down, Stella throughout his career has really found ways of bending those rules, of working in those parameters, asking questions. For instance, he asks, whoever said a painting surface had to be flat? Because for most of history, it was multidimensional. Starting with the cave painting. That's a rough topography. So he starts going from the flat canvas to creating these multi-dimensional surfaces on which to paint. The other question he asks, whoever said a painting has to be a rectangle or a square? For, again, most of history, if you think of mural paintings, during the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, or even paintings from Greece and Rome that are murals, it's the architecture intrudes on the shape of the painting. A window, a door will affect the perimeter, the shape of the painting. So he starts creating shaped paintings with this idea that a painting does not have to be limited to a rectangle or square. So how I see it is Stella is constantly asking questions of the art, and the art is speaking back to him. And that's why I think that this is so amazing, is that he really has given us amazing insight into understanding how someone of such an enormous, intellectual capacity, creativity, is able to see things that we see every day and just take for granted, and analyzes it, turns it around, and makes something truly remarkable and astonishing.
It's very exciting, and congratulations on that show opening. When will it open to the public?
It opens to the public November 12th, and it will be up through July 8th. And it's a kind of exhibition that people will need to see over and over again because it is just so rich. And there's so much to see. He claims it's his most comprehensive exhibition, which I'm hesitant to say because I want to go and do the numbers and make sure that's true. We've turned over almost our entire museum to the exhibition. And we know that there will be art historians, curators, scholars, critics needing to come from all over the world to study this because, again, these working archives, which is we have over 100 works right there, have never been shown before, and they are so illuminating.
That's very exciting. Bonnie, before we go, I want to ask you the question I always ask everyone at the end, which is, what are you reading at the moment? It could be off-topic or not.
Well, actually, I just started rereading Frank Stella's writings from his lectures. I'm sorry, for Harvard. The Norton series he did at Harvard University. His own writings, which are primarily about the history of art, are just so brilliant. And they are about Caravaggio or Matisse or Picasso or Kandinsky, but they're really about him. And to have someone that has such a unique, passionate view of art and art history, and to realize how that then applies back to his own work is very exciting. So I just started picking it up and I've read it many times before, but I'm reading it again. And I'm finding new things in it now that I'm seeing. The other thing is that there's works in these shows that have never been shown before, not just the study works, but works that might be considered outtakes or misfits, but in a way those themselves lead to a revelation, because we can try to determine why he didn't pursue a certain path, or to realize now retrospectively that they were just 20 years too soon, and that they are very much connected to what he's doing today. So reading that book now with the current show, it's already up, even though he works fast. It's a very complex show to do, but it's all up. And so I'm already in the process where I'm rethinking everything now that I have these works right in front of me and I'm experiencing them.
Well, I certainly look forward to seeing the show myself. Bonnie, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, and congratulations again on this particular exhibit.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.